and thanks so much for joining us on Better Beyond 50, where we talk about simple diet and lifestyle tips and strategies to make the second phase of your life the best years of your life. If you haven't already, make sure you check out my free training where I give you a simple plan to create vibrant health after 50. Just head on over to betterbeyond50.com and enter your email to sign up. Now, in today's episode, I'm talking with clinical nutritionist and traditional naturopath David Getoff about cancer. And you're going to discover how some of the very foods we're eating and pharmaceutical drugs we're taking every day cause cancer cells to develop. You'll also discover the 6 steps that you can take to prevent cancer cells from growing, the 3 most important steps you should take after a recent diagnosis, and why none of the conventional cancer approaches like surgery, radiation, drug, and chemotherapy are not truly effective solutions. This interview will really open your eyes to many of the misconceptions about cancer, and it will empower you to feel in control of your health. I really hope you like it. All right, are you ready to talk about cancer?
I'm always ready to talk about cancer. Yeah. I treat way too much cancer. There are way too many people that have cancer. The way I usually put it is, it always bothers me the number of times I am working to treat a preventable condition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to start with a quote that you have on your website. It's sort of like an excerpt of a quote, and I wanted you to just sort of elaborate on it. So I know you work with a lot of people that have cancer, and you say, "I do not treat cancer. I don't consider it to be an illness. The purpose of what I do and of what the information set forth here is designed for is not to directly kill cancer cells. Cancer cells are, in fact, your cells and not the cells of some different organism." Can you start by talking a little bit about, you know, what cancer is and how it actually develops?
Well, the big thing that nobody usually discusses or thinks about it, and of course it doesn't necessarily make a difference, but it's helpful to know things, is that when you get an infection, whether it's a viral infection, a bacterial infection, or a fungal infection, which are the 3 things that we call infections, you have either been invaded by, if you want to use that term, one of those organisms, and then they reproduced and reproduced and reproduced, and it was no longer enough for your body to handle, or you had one of these already in your body, because we're loaded with fungi, viruses, and bacteria, and because your immune system wasn't doing its job correctly, one of them started growing out of control of the body, and you had too many, and it caused a problem. But in either case, even though there are some similarities, we're talking about a different organism, one of those 3, fungi, bacteria, virus, which is not the same as cancer, because cancer is your cells. One of your cells has become a rogue cell. Our cells are designed to live varying numbers of, you know, days or weeks and then die. It's called a programmed cell death. The word is either apoptosis or apoptosis. Some people pronounce the P, some people don't. But that's programmed cell death, and in cancer, the cell loses that, and it no longer has its automatic, it's time to die, and it just keeps on growing and growing out of control. So it is our actual cells, and therefore there are a number of different things having to do with that that get done in any type of therapy somebody's going through for cancer. One, of course, is where they're cutting it out. So, you know, you've got a whole bunch let's use mushrooms coming up from your lawn. And so somebody, as they're weeding the lawn, goes and pulls the mushrooms out, but you'll find they keep on coming back because the mycelia, which is the things that they grow from, is all throughout your lawn. And you're just looking at the fruiting body that comes up. And so you're just pulling that out. Well, the same thing is true in a different way with cancer. If you have a body whose immune system, for any of a number of reasons that we will probably discuss, is not working well enough, and so some of your cancer cells that the experts tell us we all produce every day, and the body identifies them and kills them because there aren't too many of them to overload the body, and it can't do that, and because our immune system is working well enough to do that, then they get killed, and we make some more for whatever reasons. We'll go over some of those reasons, and we kill them. But if you can't kill them and one becomes two, becomes four, becomes eight, and they get to the point where there are the number of multiple millions that there's a tumor, now we have a problem. But again, these are our cells. So one thing is cutting them out. A second thing, of course, is burning them, which is what they do either electrically or with radiation. A third thing is poisoning them with chemotherapy. And both, of course, the radiation and the poisoning are killing far more of your healthy cells than it is doing of your cancer cells, because most of us are healthy. Most of our cells are healthy. The amount of cancer in our body doesn't come close to the amount of healthy cells. So when we put chemotherapy or radiation in, we're always killing more healthy cells than we're killing bad cells. And then the last of which is usually referred to as redifferentiation, which is to get the body working so well that some or many of these cells redifferentiate back down into the healthy cell they're supposed to be. And whether or not that's what is occurring, or whether your body's immune system is now able to more adequately identify and kill something, either way, I don't treat the cancer, I'm treating the person. And the person, we need to get your immune system and your body in general working well enough that had it been working that well to begin with, you never would have gotten the cancer. And now let's get it working so much more than that, that it can begin to work adequately against the cancer.
Yeah, I'd love to talk more about that in just a minute. I'd love to start, though, by kind of digging more into the reasons that the cancer develops. What are some things, you know, in our lifestyle, what are some things in our diet that can actually contribute to the growth of cancer?
Well, the easiest way to just say what causes cancer, it's an acceptable answer, is an inadequately operating immune system is what causes cancer. You know, you're stretching the word cause just a little bit, because really what caused the inadequate operating immune system is really the cause, and we're going to go over that. But if your immune system is working well enough, it identifies these cells and kills them. So if your immune system isn't working well enough, that's when we get cancer. Now, you said, what are the things that we are exposed to or eating or using or whatever that do this? That's a gigantic list. I mean, that list could go on forever and ever and ever. You said, what are the things we're eating that could cause cancer? Well, we're eating pesticides, herbicides, fungicides that are on all of our non-organic food that most people eat. You're eating all of the arsenic, cadmium, nickel, mercury that are residues in the ground and in some of the pesticides and in some of the fertilizers and most people's mouths. If you have a single silver filling, every single silver filling on the planet Earth is made of what's called an amalgam, which is 50 to 54% pure mercury. So, you know, you're eating that off of your filling, even if it wasn't in your food. So those are just a few of the different things. I get upset if a doctor, if a physician is asked what causes cancer, and the physician, and this is a very ignorant statement, says, we don't know what causes cancer. And when I hear a doctor say that somewhere, maybe I'm lecturing at a medical conference, and at one of the tables that I'm having lunch or dinner at, somebody's saying, you know, if only we knew what caused cancer, you know, we'd be able to maybe stop it. And I go, now, wait a minute, hold it. I will interrupt them, and I'll say, you know what the physician's desk reference is, and of course they do. It's that gigantic book that comes out every year that has basically the insert that comes with every single book, every single drug. So yeah, every drug has all these different things that they're, especially prescription drugs, they're required to say. So prescription drugs have this big insert, and those inserts and some additional information are all reproduced in tiny itty-bitty type in this big PDR, physician's desk reference. And of course they say, yeah, of course I know what the PDR is. I get a new one sent to me every year. I go, well, okay, so my second question is, do you know what the word carcinogenic means? And they smile, because obviously I'm trying to say something to get them in trouble. They go, come on, of course I know what carcinogenic means. Carcinogenic means causes cancer or cancer causing. I said, good. Now, if you sat down in front of the PDR and you pulled one out, actually while I'm saying this, let me grab my PDR and just take a look and see how many pages are in here. It varies every year. Over 3,000. So you've got over 3,000 pages in the PDR. Now, if you grab the PDR and you started sitting there going from page to page, and at every single drug that you got to, you read down the area where it had descriptions of what we know about it. And if you made a little mark on the pad next to you, for every one in which the manufacturer of the drug lists it as being tested and proven to be carcinogenic, you would have hundreds of drugs, because hundreds of drugs have been proven and therefore must be listed by the manufacturers as being carcinogenic. Now, are the only things in our society that are carcinogenic pharmaceutical drugs? Of course not. All I'm saying is for a doctor to say, we have no idea what causes cancer, when hundreds of the drugs they prescribe are listed by their manufacturers as causing cancer, is a little ignorant. I mean, if they were to say, geez, there are so many different things that cause cancer, lots of the drugs we prescribe cause cancer, the manufacturers even say so, it's just that we never know what exactly caused your cancer, I would accept that statement.
I love to be a fly on the wall witnessing this conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Can we talk a little bit more about the problems with current treatments? So you talked about, you know, the surgery cutting it out, but of course it can come back, burning them with radiation, poisoning them with chemo. You know, what's the problem when we take this sort of, you know, conventional approach?
All right. Well, first let's cover real quick the term "it came back." So if you've got a whole bunch of cockroach nests under your kitchen sink, in hidden areas, maybe behind the wall where there's some little cutouts in the wall that occurred from leaks over time, or underneath the lower drawers of some of your kitchen cabinets that you would never even be able to get to unless you pulled the entire drawers out, and an exterminator comes in, and never does an exterminator go into all those areas. They wouldn't even take that much time. I don't use exterminators because I won't have poisons in my house. But when they come in, they're not going to do that. They're going to spray exterior areas. So you notice maybe for a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks or a couple months, because of the residual effect of the poisons they're putting down, pretty much all of which have been proven to be carcinogenic, by the way, that you don't see any roaches. And then finally, the ones that are still alive in the walls, in your walls, in your house, or underneath your, you know, your drawers, come back out again, would somebody say they came back? Well, you know, they might say that, but it wouldn't be correct because they never left. Mm-hmm. They were still there. Mm-hmm. So when we say cancer came back, I don't like the term "it came back." Your immune system, it has a job, and its job is multifactorial, but part of its job is to identify an aberrant or rogue cell and kill it. And if it isn't able to kill as many as it's supposed to, and now they start growing again, because of course none of the things that made your immune system inadequate were addressed during the surgery. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, since we know that surgery is very aggressive and hurts the body, I mean, we're cutting human tissue, you know, that's hurting the body. One doctor at the podium at a conference made a comment, and I loved his comment so much I use it over and over again. He said, if your body could speak English, it would say that surgery is an automobile accident with drugs added. So, you know, we got all this tissue being damaged. Now they're using anesthetics, so you don't feel the pain during the surgery. They're using antibiotics, so all sorts of infection doesn't set in from all the tissue that was killed. So basically, while they're cutting out what they would like to get rid of, they are drastically reducing your immune function, and therefore they're making it even more likely that your body would be able to develop cancer cells out of your regular cells because it's not working as well as it should.
What about some of the problems with, like, radiation and chemo?
Well, again, the idea that something that's your own cell, that for many reasons that we'll discuss some of as far as the poisons and everything, is not operating correctly and has become rogue or an aberrant cell and is now listed, if it gets taken a look at in a biopsy lab, as being cancerous, that we want to kill that cell, but we want to kill it with something, radiation and chemotherapy. We want to kill it with something that is not targeted 100%. And in many cases, it's not targeted at all. The only reason I said not targeted 100% is because if they're sending radiation to one particular area, at least it's not going over your whole body. If they give you chemotherapy, unless it's an implant that goes right next to or in the tumor, it also is going either into your bloodstream or you take it as a tablet, so it's going through your entire body. We have mostly healthy cells. And so it's sort of like the collateral damage, you know, which we all say is such a bad idea in wars, where somebody decides that they're going to bomb a city because it had some very bad people in it, and the fact that it has 100,000% more good people than bad people, if that's the only way they can get rid of people, and then we don't know what kind of stuff that, you know, our government does, but when this comes out to the public, it's always, wait a minute, hold it. We don't want to do those kinds of things. We don't want to kill all the good people to get the couple bad people. This is America. That's not the way we work. Well, this is America, and if you're in the medical profession, that is exactly how we work. That is the exact same thing that we say we don't want to do in war is exactly what we do in the human body. We say it doesn't make any difference if we're going to kill a million healthy cells for every cancer cell that we kill. We're going to do it anyway. That's called chemotherapy.
What, so when someone takes that approach, I mean, what are the potential risks? Because you are killing so many healthy cells. So, I mean, I've heard of people actually getting sick or even dying as a result of doing the chemo.
Oh, there are huge numbers of people in which, you know, the standard joking statement, but it's not a joke and it's not funny at all, is the surgery or the procedure was a success, but the patient died. So they found that, wow, the cancer is gone and the patient is dead because they died of what is called the side effects of the treatment, which is the chemotherapy. And that's what happens. And that can happen in many different ways, usually because the organs of detoxification of the human body are the kidneys and the liver, and because, therefore, any chemotherapy that comes in, depending on which type and what pathways of detox it's eliminated by, are going to go through the kidneys, the liver, or both, and all of these poisons are going through these organs, and it destroys them. And so somebody's liver shuts down, or somebody's kidney or kidneys shut down, and they die, unless maybe they can get it out fast enough and they want to do a kidney or liver transplant. And now you're on anti-rejection drugs for the rest of your life. So very, very often, and I mean very often, I don't know what the actual statistic is, the reasons that people die are not from the cancer. The reasons that people die are from the side effects, which is really a funny word, but side effects of the chemotherapy. I remember one doctor at a conference. I think he was an MD and a pharmacist. He just decided he wanted to study pharmacy, and he said, drugs don't have side effects. He said, drugs only have effects. And if the medical profession and the manufacturer doesn't like the effect, that one's called a side effect.
Right. Can we talk a little bit about some effective non-traditional cancer treatments? I mean, what are the alternatives? If someone is recently diagnosed with cancer and they're saying, I don't want to do chemo, I don't want to have surgery, I don't want to do the radiation, what's the natural alternative?
Well, the natural alternative is always to do everything that you can learn or your health practitioner knows about to improve your immune system's ability to do its job. I mean, no matter what we're doing, if it's an alternative therapy, it's helping your immune system do what it was supposed to be doing better, or you wouldn't have the cancer. I also hate the word alternative because traditional, by definition, is something that's been done traditionally. Traditions generally are thousands of years old, sometimes tens of thousands of years old, whereas alternative is something that isn't traditional. And so if we've been using diet and herbs and plants and potents and things, potions for thousands and thousands of years in countries such as India, where it's called Ayurvedic medicine, in China, where it's called TCM or traditional Chinese medicine, then those are all traditional therapies. So diet and the use of herbs, and we can just say, you know, supplements. We didn't have vitamin supplements back then. We didn't even know the vitamins existed. Would all be called traditional therapies, whereas something other than that, that's only a couple hundred years old, as opposed to tens of thousands, would be called non-traditional or alternative, and therefore, if you used English correctly, which of course is not being done, then drug-based and surgery-based and chemotherapy-based, which is a drug, and radiation, would all be called technically, as far as Noah Webster and Merriam-Webster and old dictionary people, those would all be called alternative therapies. But it doesn't look good to say that somebody's doing alternative therapies when they're mainstream, so they've turned the words on their head, and they say we're doing the alternative therapies when in fact we're not, and they're doing the traditional therapies when in fact they're not. But what we're talking about is we need to address the most important reasons that somebody's immune system wasn't working well enough to prevent these cells that we produce from developing into a tumor and becoming something that they can actually find. And the things that we need to do, therefore, involve getting rid of all the foods that were not anywhere near as healthy or adequate as the old foods we used to eat a long time ago when there was almost no cancer. So we didn't have pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. Everything was organic. We just didn't know it was organic because we didn't have that word, because we didn't have a word for pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. So, automatically, we want to get rid of all the things that we know can deplete the immune function. So people go to organic foods only. However, when I talk about organic, like my DVD on organic food, organic does not mean healthy. I can give you organic cobra venom. I can give you organic mercury and organic lead and organic arsenic. I can raise an organic fruit or vegetable in something that is allowed to be called certified organic, but they didn't use as good organic fertilizers as somebody else would, or they used a variety that wasn't as healthy, or they grew it in pretty lousy soil, but they used organic approved nutrients. So organic doesn't automatically mean healthy. Plus, I can get you an organic candy bar, and the sugar in there that's feeding your cancer cells and making them very happy and grow and reproduce faster was organic.
Yeah.
So, when I say organic, that we want to go organic, there's really a lot more to that, which is a separate discussion. But one thing would be using only organic foods. Second thing would be cutting your sugar content to as close to zero as you're willing. Zero would be very good. And only using sweeteners that would not be called sugar, would not be called artificial. And if you want to sweeten something, it has to be something which is not an artificial sweetener and would not be called a sugar. So that could be stevia, that could be yacon, that could be lohan. These are substances from nature that have chemicals in them that taste very sweet, but that the cancer cells can't eat. And that way we help balance blood sugar levels. So that's the second thing. We've got the organic foods, and we've gotten rid of all the bad foods. We're reducing our sugar intake as much as possible. Now we need to regulate your blood sugar during the day, because cancer cells love spikes in blood sugar. They say, thank you very much. That was good. That was delicious. Do it again. And so we don't want spikes in blood sugar. We want a nice level amount of blood sugar all day. And therefore, in general, in order to level the blood sugar, there are two ways to do that. The right way, which is the old-fashioned way, as usual, and the wrong way, which is the new-fashioned way that people are being told, which is wrong. The right way, the old-fashioned way, is to eat a high-fat, high-protein diet of good quality fats and good quality proteins, and that would be another discussion. And when you eat proteins with all the fats that should be on there, so in other words, if you have, let's say, four eggs for breakfast and a little bit of maybe raw milk if you're in a state that can get raw milk and whatever seasonings you have on the eggs, those four eggs for breakfast, as long as you leave the yolk where it's supposed to be in the egg and therefore in your stomach, those four eggs for breakfast, you won't be the least bit hungry for 6 or 7 hours afterwards, which is holding your blood sugar level, which is a good thing. Now, if instead you decided that you wanted a glass of fresh squeezed orange juice and a piece of multigrain organic sprouted bread with it, those two things will sabotage your blood sugar, and now it will spike up and make the cancer cells happy, shoot back down too far and make you feel hungry. And instead of the four eggs holding you for 7 hours, now you're hungry in 3 hours, even though you ate more food. So number three is eating in such a way to hold the blood sugar level. And the new way to do that, which is the wrong way, is by eating multiple times a day, by having snacks all the time, by grazing. We are not cows. We don't have two stomachs. We don't chew our cud. And we are not supposed to be grazing. And we know that because there weren't stores, cupboards, or refrigeration if you go back thousands and thousands of years. So our DNA is not used to being able to eat all the time. And it hasn't changed enough to be able to do that. And so if we do that, the blood sugar goes up and down, up and down, up and down. Your body keeps on producing insulin. Insulin is an aging hormone, and we don't want that. So we've got those things in there.
Quickly, David, before you move on,
sure.
How many hours should someone go between meals? 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours?
Well, I try never to give specific things because we are so different. And the amount of energy that somebody uses up when they're a mailman, you know, walking around the streets, or when they're an exercise instructor and she's got a bunch of people in front of her in her class and she's also doing the exercise or whatever, that can be way different than a sedentary person who sits at a computer terminal all day. So the number of hours is going to depend on a lot of different things. However, I have a sort of a general rule that I give people, and even though it certainly is not 100%, it will give you some idea, and that is that if you eat a meal and you, that meal doesn't hold you, so you're not the least bit hungry for at least maybe 5 hours, there was something wrong with the meal.
Okay.
So, you know, I will often have my smoothie in the morning, and I'm a late night person. I go to bed at midnight, and I get up at 8:30. That's my 8.5 hours, and sleep is also important for regeneration and keeping your immune system working. That's another issue we could cover if you wanted to. But that's my 8.5 hours. So if I have my breakfast smoothie at, let's say, my first patient is usually 9:30 in the morning, so I'll have my breakfast smoothie maybe at 9 a.m. I am not the least bit hungry, I mean, at all. I don't even think about food. People are coming in here, they're having snacks as I'm teaching them all this stuff, but I'm not the least bit hungry until usually 5, 6, 7 hours later. So like 1:30, 2, 2:30, 3, 4 o'clock, that's when I start to notice somewhere in there that I'm a little bit hungry. And if somebody has a meal and they are hungry before then something either was inadequate, or if it was adequate, something sabotaged its adequacy because this other something had in it some starches or sugars or alcohol, and that sabotages the good things.
Makes sense. So we've got, you gave us three steps: eating organic foods, cutting the sugar content, preferably to zero, regulating blood sugar, making sure we're getting enough fat and protein. Any other important steps?
Sure. Next important step, and there really aren't in any order, although I always put food as number one, because if you're going to eat foods that don't hold your body's blood sugar level and that feed the cancer, why bother wasting time and money on these others?
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how many people go, well, no, I don't want to change my diet or anything. Just give me the supplement. No, sorry, I won't do it. I mean, if you're not going to get rid of the people that are throwing rocks at your windows or the people that are throwing napalm at your house, you're not going to get rid of them. You just want to make the house stronger or the windows stronger. That's just the wrong way to do things.
Right.
So next thing would be supplements. And it would be bringing in the nutrients that the body doesn't have enough of. And there are many there. And if somebody wants to get a cardio ion panel, I know it says cardio, but that's one of the good panels, cardio ion panel from Metametrics. That could give you a really good idea if you don't have somebody good to work with or your doctor doesn't know a lot about nutrition. But we want to bring in all of the basic nutrients to make sure they're adequate. And then we want to bring in a bunch of immune-enhancing supplements. And there are many out there. Some are specifically researched for cancer. There are a number of different mushrooms, for example. The maitake mushroom, the coriolis mushroom, those two have a lot of research specifically against cancer. But anything that supports your immune system, it could be any number of mushrooms. It could be any number of different herbs. There are a bunch of anti-cancer herbs out there. Graviola has been researched a lot for cancer. There are specific supplements from different companies. There's a supplement that has extracts of the pawpaw in it, which is a very strong anti-cancer product that's called Phytocyto. I mean, there are a lot of them out there. I have maybe 45 different immune products. Colostrum is a phenomenal product. Colostrum LD from Sovereign Laboratories in Arizona is a powder. and it's a great immune modulator that helps get the body working. So the nutrients the body needs have to come in, and then we have to bring in a whole bunch of either immune-enhancing or anti-cancer or both supplements to give the body a little bit of a boost to push it up. So that's another entire area, and there are a lot of those. My favorite mushroom company is JHS Natural Products for health practitioners, and when the exact same capsule in the exact same bottle with a different label is sold in the health food store, the company is called Mushroom Science. So that's the same company, Mushroom Science or JHS. No matter what anybody ever says about some other company being equal or better, they are not as far as mushrooms are concerned. Next thing is detoxification. Because if we didn't have as many poisons in our body as we have, chances are very good that the body's immune system would be working a heck of a lot better. So we have to do various ways of pulling poisons out. And there are lots of ways of doing that, and there are all sorts of different people that would rather do one or another. Somebody could go in for colonics, that'll help a little bit. Somebody could learn about online the procedure of doing coffee enemas, which are a fabulous way of dumping a bunch of poisons quickly. Coffee enemas are great. I love them, and I highly applaud those people that are willing to do maybe a coffee enema every day for the first couple of months as they're starting to work on this, because if they're doing the Gerson therapy, they'd be doing between 4 and 6 a day. So one a day isn't even a lot. There are different substances that can be used. People can see if they can find a really good type of a granular activator powdered, superfine powdered charcoal, and take that correctly in the right doses, working with somebody to start binding on the poisons and pulling them out of your body. You know, there are different homeopathics that do detoxification. Liver and kidney support are generally the first thing that you do, because if you start to pull poisons out and you don't have the liver and kidneys working correctly, the person immediately feels worse. But if you have the liver and kidneys working correctly, that's already helping detoxification, and then everything makes them feel better. So we've got all of this for detoxification. And then lastly, but absolutely not least, by no means least, is ways to reduce stress and inflammation on the body. And stress and inflammation are very similar, because they've shown over and over again that anything that stresses the body causes inflammation. And so if somebody is living in an area where, oh, I don't know, let's say there's heavy industry right outside, and all day long while you're at home, if you work at home or if you're retired, instead of listening to crickets and the birds that I just heard chirping outside my window, or the rain I heard coming down a couple minutes ago, it seems to have slowed down a little bit, you're listening to people with jackhammers or jet airplanes or something. That's a stress, and that stress reduces your immune function. If you can't stand your job, that's a stress. It reduces your immune function. If you can't stand your partner, that's a stress. It reduces your immune function. If you can't stand the fact that your mother-in-law, father-in-law, or fill-in-the-blank is currently living with you, that's a stress. It reduces your immune function. I'm not saying these are things that you can change as easily as taking a supplement or eating differently. I'm just telling you that they're reducing your immune function, and that that's one of the things that makes a difference. I mean, I've met people that they had cancer, they were doing all sorts of different things, and they split up with their spouse, and within 6 months, the body's ability to fight the cancer got so much better that their cancer went away. Mm-hmm. Again, I mean, I'm not telling people, I'm just giving people information that this is important. Well, of all of the different stressors around there, around us, that cause inflammation on the human body, probably the most we could say misunderstood. I think probably the best way to extrapolate on it would be to say the least talked about, the most missed, and the most just unknown. I mean, not totally unknown. The people doing the research know about it, but it's not getting to the public, is wireless technologies. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've got cancer, or any other condition. We're talking about cancer. And while we're asleep, our body's supposed to be regenerating. Our body's supposed to be doing, I don't know, many hundreds, thousands, millions, I have no idea, and I don't know if we'll ever know, of different things during our sleep cycle. And if it's not relaxed, because it's busy fighting with a little bit of fight or flight stuff while you're supposed to be relaxed sleeping. It can't possibly do as much as you want. And if you have Wi-Fi in your house, or you have cordless phones in your house, and you didn't at the very least, I don't have either, I refuse to have them in this building, but if you didn't at the very least unplug the Wi-Fi and unplug the cordless phones when the last person goes to sleep, so at least everybody's getting more regenerative sleep when you're asleep, your body isn't even relaxed when you're sleeping. So we just covered a lot of different things.
Yeah. It's and it sounds like, I mean, there's, you know, for someone who is just recently diagnosed and you're sort of listening to all this information, it can be very overwhelming.
Very.
And just that in and of itself can be an additional stressor. So what would you recommend to someone if, you know, is they're just sort of getting started on making changes in their life? Like, where would be, like, maybe the top three things? You know, I can only handle so much change. Like, what are three big things I can do right now? And then when I'm ready to start making additional changes, you know, I'll make them.
Well, I will include in the top three, and I may change my mind, and maybe it won't be three, maybe it'll be two, maybe it'll be four, but you said three, so we'll use three. that one of the first things you need to do is ask your oncologist, and generally, if somebody's been diagnosed, they have an oncologist, because that's usually who did the diagnosis. Ask the oncologist, for my type of cancer, and in your experience, if instead of finding the cancer today, we found it, I'll pick a number, three months from today, how different would it be? And in the majority of cancers, the vast majority of cancers, if you have an honest physician, and I understand many of them, I don't know what they're trying to prove, but if you have an honest physician, in most cancers, the answer the doctor will give you is, oh, just 3 months? There wouldn't be any difference. It would be exactly the same as it is today. So they just got through telling you that you don't have to do a damn thing for the next 3 months. You can sit back and you can relax and think about this before you dash in to surgery. Start chemo immediately. Start radiation immediately. Because the expert that you trust just said if you found it 3 months from now, there wouldn't be any difference for that type of cancer. Their job is to get you instantly doing all these different things. And a lot of people get killed from the therapies. Many, many, many. So the question is, what do you want to do? And I can't tell you what you want to do. I would not even want to tell you what you want to do. I tell people, I will tell them what I would do if they want to ask me that. Generally, that's not a question that comes up. But if somebody says, what should I do? I will say, I can't tell you that. This has to be your decision. I am here to give you all the information I can so that you can make a more knowledgeable decision. But very important, the doctor wants to start chemo tomorrow. Well, if that patient had heard this recording, and the second that they were told they have cancer, they said, okay, doc, quick question before we start the chemo. For my type of cancer, if you found this 3 months from now instead of today, what differences would you expect to see? And again, in most cases, with an honest doctor, doc, well, 3 months, no, there wouldn't be any difference. Good. Take a breath. Stop listening to everything he wants you to do. And go home and do some reading. Some of the things that I'll tell you to read, some of the things you learn from somebody else, I don't care where. Just don't be pushed into something when the expert has just told you in 3 months there wouldn't be a difference. So number one is calm the hell down and don't be pushed into something because that's their job. So we'll call that number one because I think that is the most important. Otherwise, you're already hurting your body with the chemo. And even though there are a couple types of cancers, some leukemias and lymphomas, where they have managed to cure them totally, and of course they may come back because of the side effects of the chemo destroying your immune system, but at least there are a couple cancers where they work. In most forms of cancer, the survival rates and the outcomes are the same today as they were 35 years ago, but they make it seem like they're different. Like they'll say, oh no, people are living 4 years longer with such and such a cancer than they were 30 years ago, and if you did the research thoroughly, you would find out in those particular cases that almost always our diagnostic abilities, because of different types of imaging techniques, are that we can now find a 4 year smaller cancer. When you can find something 4 years smaller, telling somebody that they now live 4 years longer from diagnosis is a little bit of stretching something into a lie. Because what you're really saying is we found it 4 years earlier, not that you live 4 years longer because of anything we're doing. There's a big, 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 big difference there. And I still remember when the person who blew a lot of the whistles on this, who wrote one of the first most important books, which is still a fabulous book which everybody should read, simply called The Cancer Industry by Ralph Moss. He worked at Memorial Sloan Kettering. Somebody came into his office one day, and he was disseminating information about cancer to the media, to the health professionals, etc. And some friend of his came in one day, he's told the story many times, it's in his books, and said, you know, Ralph, and I think Ralph Moss, PhD, so they could call him Dr. Moss, but you know, Ralph, what you're saying really isn't true. People are not living any longer with cancer. They're just finding it a little bit sooner, and they're claiming that had something to do with why people are living longer. If you find something 2 years earlier, and they live 2 years longer from the diagnosis, then really they're living the exact same amount of time. You just found it earlier. And he said, no. He said, that can't be. That would mean that Memorial Sloan Kettering and these big places that were lying, we wouldn't be lying to people. So he went into their archives, did a whole bunch of research, looked stuff up, found out that that was in fact true, that they were lying to the media, lying to the public, or at the very least misleading and misrepresenting tremendously. And he went to his bosses and he said, we're one of the bastions of science and cancer. Why are we misleading? Why are we saying things in a way to make something appear some way that it isn't? And he got the most often given benefit when you say this to your employers, fired, and wrote the first book entitled The Cancer Industry, which is still a great book. And then he wrote many additional other books after that and still has been writing them. Do I have some of his books? Yeah, Questioning Chemotherapy is a phenomenal book of his. Two of my heroes are Ralph Moss and Dr. Samuel Epstein, because their books are so able to go over exactly what's going on, it's just astonishing. National Cancer Institute and American Cancer Society, this is one of Epstein's most recent books, Criminal Indifference to Cancer Prevention and Conflicts of Interest. You know, they've got great books out that people can read. So that's one of the things somebody might read. Somebody might say, okay, I've got 3 months at least to make some decisions, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go pick up a used copy of The Cancer Industry and learn a little bit about this industry, which all of a sudden I've been thrown into. And that will open their mind up a little bit, and they can decide, you know, maybe they want to do things because of it. There's a movie, which I'm never sure if I even want to tell people to watch. It's called Cancer is Curable Now. That's the title of the movie. It was put out by Wake Up TV, and I'm one of the 25 or 30 people that are on it. They went around the universe, basically went around the world interviewing different cancer experts. And, you know, when they first did this, I said, that's great. I can hand this out to my patients. I can tell people, go buy a copy. I'm not even sure about doing that, because if you listen to 25 or 35 different people going over the way they treat cancer, and you hear how differently somebody, like one person wants you on a vegetarian diet, one person wants you on a high fruit diet, I want you on a no fruit diet. It can make somebody so confused. Yeah. I mean, they were trying to get more information. It's like, oh my God, did I really want to see this? But then, you know, I get phone calls from people and I say, you know, where did you find me? And they go, well, I saw the cancer is curable video. And I go, really? Now you've got my interest. After watching that video and seeing, again, it's got about like 30 different people, many of whom are actually MDs, how the heck did you pick me? And they went, well, we listened to all the different people, and you know, I and my family were trying to discern who had their heart in the right place, who didn't seem like a fanatic, who was saying things that was then backing them up and giving us reasons that made sense, and we all chose you. Okay, all right. I mean, I'll accept that. So I guess it is possible to get through some of that, but I don't want to make people even more confused than they already are.
Right.
It's a hard one.
Right. Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, it's so important that we educate ourselves. I mean, but it can be overwhelming because, you know, like you just said, you can sort of inundate with yourself with information, and then you get so much conflicting information that it's, you don't feel like you've made any progress. Even though you've started to educate yourself, you still feel stuck.
Right. You can add a whole bunch of informational knowledge, and you can now go, great, I now have more different ways that my brain is moving than there were before, and I was trying to narrow it down.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I produced a video, and my video, I always have fun with words, my video is called Cancer, Your Doctor's Lack of Knowledge Can Shorten Your Life. And that's available from the Price Partners Nutrition Foundation. And one of these days, it's hopefully before the end of the year, I'll have my new website out where everything will be streaming. But even though the quality of that video is not up to what I do now, because the person that did the videotaping, you know, was not an expert, the content is perfect. Mm-hmm. And I realized when I was getting ready to do that video a number of years ago, I said, you know, I could probably be looked at as being a little bit more forceful with the knowledge that I'm going to be presenting if I had a licensed physician sitting next to me. And so I called up a couple doctors I knew, and I said, look, I'm going to be doing this video on cancer. Would you be willing to sit there with me, and we can have some discussions, and when I say something, I might turn to you and say, would you give me your opinion? And a couple of them were afraid, because, you know, they didn't want to be targeted. Mm-hmm. And one of them said, sure, absolutely. Give me a little bit of an idea of some of the things you're going to talk about so I can actually pull some research studies and read them so I will be able to not just be giving my opinion, but if the research backs up what you're saying, as you say it is, I'll be able to say, yeah, I looked at the research and it does back up what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on that video along with a medical doctor, Dr. David Berald. And it came out very, very well. Again, you know, quality isn't perfect, but the content is all that matters. And so I'm going over these things. And when I do my videos, I now include a DVD with a video and an additional CD for your computer, because every time I reproduce them, if there's some new information that's come out, a new supplement I like, I just add that to the CD, which is easy, and all the updates are on the CD.
Awesome. And what's the name of that again?
The name is Cancer. Your doctor's lack of knowledge can shorten your life.
And you said that's going to be available on your new site, or do you have it available now?
Oh, it's available now. The Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation, okay. PP for Price Pottinger, NF for nutritionfoundation.org. They have it in their video section. They sell it. But what I'm doing is that the new site that's coming up, anybody that goes to my website and just hits the subscribe button, you'll be notified when this happens. But the new site, hopefully by the end of this year, I'm going to have lots of these videos where instead of somebody paying 40 or 50 or 80 or whatever it is dollars for the DVD, they can instead just pay maybe, you know, 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 just to watch it, like going to the movies. You don't own the movie. You're not buying the DVD. You're just going to the movies. You're paying 10 bucks to go to the movies instead of spending 30 bucks to own the DVD.
Gotcha. Okay, good. Great. Good to know. Now, I'm wondering how you deal with someone. You mentioned before, like, if someone is recently diagnosed with cancer, they come to you and they're like, you know, just give me the supplements. Or, you know, they're not willing to make the changes that you're suggesting. You know, they might say, I can't afford to get organic food, or, you know, I just don't have time, you know, to prepare healthy meals. This sounds like it's too much work, you know, whatever sort of excuse they're giving you. What do you say to that person who's just not willing to make the changes?
Well, about 15 years ago, could have been 20, I wrote a brochure on cancer. And back then, we didn't have, 20 years ago, we didn't have web pages. And I wanted to discourage people who had cancer and were not going to be able to do or not willing to do enough things that they had a chance of fighting it to pay money and come in to see me. Because I didn't want to waste my time and their money when somebody else was waiting 2 months to come in to see me. I could put them into that spot. And I just called it Cancer Brochure, you know, about if you have cancer. And now, of course, it's the web pages. So now if you go to my web page and you slowly scroll down all the dozens of buttons on the left, one of them says Cancer Brochure. And if you just read that, that's where it was put. Now it's all up there. And I used to send this out to people as soon as somebody would make an appointment. You know, I was booked up a couple months in advance. They'd make an appointment, and I would take a deposit and send this out. And I would get a number of people, I couldn't tell you what the percentage was, fairly low, that would call me up. And they would say, I read the brochure you sent along with all your paperwork, and you make it very, very clear that you would rather discourage people that aren't going to do all this stuff because you're not going to be able to help them and you don't want to take their money. And as I look over some of the things you're talking about, you know, I fall into that category. So I cancel the appointment. I give them back the deposit.
Okay.
And every time I would do that, I would feel a sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm.
Because the numbers of times over the years, which luckily is pretty small, but I can think of two or three offhand, that somebody dragged their best friend or their spouse or their adult son or daughter or their mother or father into my office with stage 4 cancer. And I went over this stuff with them beforehand. They said, no, you don't understand. They're coming. We're going to see to it that they do this stuff. And, you know, we're going to save their lives. And just for those people that are listening that say, well, you can't ever do that. I mean, if you're not into something, you're not going to get cured. That's not true. And I got to see that with my mother. I can tell you that story. If you do all the right things and you don't believe any of them and your heart isn't into it, you can still be cured. So they drag this person in, and I'll just think of one in my mind. It was a woman, stage 4 cancer. And she left here with a knowledge of all the things she would have to do. She left here with maybe, I don't know, let's pick a figure, $1,500 worth of different supplements and immune-enhancing nutrients and et cetera, you know, mushrooms. And the next thing I heard relative to that person, because I always make a second appointment immediately, and she said, no, she said, I'll call you for the second appointment. And I don't push people. That's just not my that's not my way. Next thing I heard was about 3 months later when the friend who dragged her in here called to tell me that she had died. I, by the way, don't use the word passed. I don't, you know, I pass the street sign. People die. I have no the English language, you know, is a weird language, and I don't want to pass away either. I want to die. I'll die. Hopefully I'll be 120 and I won't wake up one day. But she died. The woman that called me probably said she passed, but I don't use those words. And I go, yeah, I never heard from her again. And she said she never opened any of your supplements. Every one of them is here. She never changed her diet. She never did a thing. I said, well, please, it was only 3 months ago. Everything is still properly dated, not expired. I didn't have to ship it. Nothing was irradiated. She's local. Please bring them back. Let me write somebody a check and refund all the money. I'm sure that money can help somebody. She wasn't a wealthy person. And she says, really? You would do that? I said, of course. So I wrote them a check and refunded all the money for the supplements. But I don't like that kind of crap. I mean, it's like, don't do that. Don't come in. Don't drag somebody in that isn't going to do these things. It's just silly. And in my cancer brochure, which is up on my website, on the button cancer brochure, it goes over that. And I think if I remember correctly, I've got wording somewhat similar to, if your entire house is falling apart at the seams, and you're willing to do, you know, 20 or 30% of the things necessary to stop that, don't bother. Now, if you're willing to do 90%, that's already worthwhile. It doesn't have to be 100. A lot of people can't do 100. I understand that. I really do understand that. If somebody says, I love such and such, let's say ice cream, and can you help me learn to make myself the healthiest possible ice cream, and if I did really good eating all the right things for 2 weeks, I can have a portion of that. Yes, I will help them do that. I will teach them how to do it. Plus, part of my job, or I feel part of my job, there's no actual list of things that are my job, but I feel part of my job is to locate and make available to people, either in my office or tell them where to buy them, the best in each category. So if somebody says, you know, one of my issues is I'm a chocoholic. I love chocolate. I like Snickers bars. I like Milky Way. I like, you know, is there some way, if I'm doing these things, that I can still have some chocolate that doesn't taste like crap? Because I've tried some of the healthy chocolates and I hate them. And I've tried some other healthy chocolates and somebody looked at the label and said, this is not a healthy chocolate. It's just as bad for you. And I said, yes, that's true. Some of the ones that really are healthy taste like crap. And most of the ones that don't taste like crap are not healthy. Yes. So I will find the ones which have good quality fats in them, which are sweetened with non-converting, non-synthetic sweeteners. And the two out there are Coco Polo, which I carry in my office, COCOPOLO, Coco Polo chocolates. Diane Yamate did a fabulous job. All of her dark chocolates contain no sugar and are sweetened with stevia and non-GMO erythritol. She did a great job. They taste great. And then there's a company online, which I don't carry because most people can't afford them. They're too expensive, but they're excellent, called Genesis Chocolate, also excellent. They are sweetened with yacon. They use raw chocolate. Those two chocolates, if I have a cancer patient, they say, can I have a piece of chocolate after dinner? If it's those two, you can. So, you know, I have to, same thing comes up with something like pasta. Well, but my family eats pasta once a week. I love pasta. I go, pasta doesn't have a flavor? They go, what do you mean pasta? I said, tell me. What's the flavor of pasta if you don't have any sauce on it? They go, oh, yeah, you're right. Pasta isn't the flavor. The sauce is the flavor. I said, good. So I will teach you about the noodles that contain zero starch. And if you have a noodle that contains zero starch and you put all of your wonderful pasta sauce on it and some grass-fed beef meatballs or lamb balls or whatever, eggs that are pasture-raised, you can have it. So, you know, I like to get any way I can the healthiest stuff. So if somebody wants a substitute for something that they used to have that was lousy, if it exists, if I've been able to find it, I'll let you know which one it is, and maybe I'll even have it in my office for them.
Spaghetti squash is great.
Spaghetti squash is great, but it's just as harmful as regular pasta.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, sure, because both of them are 80% pure starch, and starch is turned into sugar by your body and feeds all your cancer cells. Okay. That's a very good example of where a lot of smart people in the health food movement have been misled. Two good examples would be people think agave nectar is good for you, even though it's pure fructose and it's just as bad or maybe a little bit worse than high fructose corn syrup, and that spaghetti squash is good because it's a vegetable, but if a vegetable is almost pure starch, you might as well be just be spooning sugar into your mouth.
Gotcha. Okay. So what about like zucchini, shredded zucchini?
Ah, zucchini is a summer squash instead of a winter squash, and therefore it is not a starch-based food, and zucchini is totally fine. And I tell people the easiest way to determine them, I just make it into a joke, if you have four or five ripe squash in front of you on your counter, the ones that you can take a knife and slice up into little pieces and put in your mouth or put in your salad are all fine. And the ones that you would have to cook first because the knife would bounce off when it's raw are the ones that are hurting you. Or I will sometimes say, if you hit it and you can squash it, it's good for you. If you hit it and it hurts you, it's hurting you.
Interesting. Okay. And just to recap on the sugar, you mentioned, I think you said, is it yacon?
A Y-A-C-O-N, which is generally pronounced yacon.
Yacon?
As though it had an E on it, which it doesn't. Yes, yacon.
Yacon,
Lohan. Yacon syrup.
You mentioned Lohan, I think, before, and stevia.
Yeah, stevia, which is one of the most mispronounced things in the health food store. It's named after the stevia robortiana plant.
Okay.
And so everybody calls it stevia, but it's actually stevia.
Okay.
So stevia, but not Truvia. Truvia, I forget whether it's Coke or Pepsi, one of the big guys decided to get in on it and have a product like that, is like a 99.9% genetically modified erythritol with a speck of stevia in it. So if you're going to get stevia, get it at the health food store, not at the regular market. My favorite brands of stevia are, number one is Stevita, made by Stevita Corporation. Another good one would be Wisdom Naturals, and a third good one would be NOW or Now Foods. The yacon I like best is from either of two companies. They're both making really good quality yacon. One of them is Herbs America. They have about three or four different names, actually. Herbs America, Amazon Therapeutic Laboratories, but Herbs America is one of their main ones, and I think they're coming up with a new website now, which I believe has even a different name on it. I might check that for you. And the other is Sun Food, which is sunfood.com. Both of them have good quality yacon syrups. And Lohan, currently nobody is selling pure Lohan. You can get pure stevia. It's very difficult, most because stevia and Lohan extract are both hundreds of times sweeter than sugar. So, you know, you want to put a teaspoon worth of sweetness in something, and it would be a speck because of how much sweeter it is. It's hard to deal with. So both Lohan and stevia, they almost always have not pure, and they instead add in usually – some non-GMO erythritol, and that way they can, you know, have them both in there and make it an amount that is manageable for people to use. And so Stavita, for example, they have a product called Stavita Spoonable Stevia. That's the one that I sell the most of. And that's the non-GMO erythritol with the stevia concentrate. And then there's a product out there called Lakanto, L-A-K-A-N-T-O. And underneath the word Lakanto, it says monk fruit sweetener. Monk fruit is Lohan. And so what this woman has done, she did a very, very good job, is she takes the non-GMO fermented erythritol, and she adds just enough of the monk fruit extract, or Lakanto, to make it so that her powder is a one-for-one sweetness equivalent of table sugar. So people have an easy time using it because it's a one-to-one quantity-wise. So a teaspoon of that equals a teaspoon of the other. And that's because erythritol is only 70% as sweet as sugar, and so she brings the sweetness up with the monk fruit extract. So Lakanto was another, you know, maybe some people, a tiny number, might get a little bit of gassiness from the erythritol, but I haven't found that in the Lakanto. Somehow or other, her formula doesn't cause that.
With the stevia, I read recently that too much of it can cause issues with the reproductive system, and I also read something about how you don't want to buy the brands that are white because they've been bleached because it comes from the stevia plant, so it should be like a greenish color. Is there some truth to that?
There is no truth to either of those. Stevia is a green herb. And what makes things green in nature?
The chlorophyll?
Chlorophyll, exactly. But chlorophyll is not stevia. Chlorophyll is chlorophyll. So when you take the chlorophyll out, it's not green anymore. It's white.
Okay.
It's not because it's been bleached. It's just because the chlorophyll is removed, because when somebody wants the taste of something, as close as possible, you know, to sugar, because they're trying to make it taste like that, you sure as heck don't want the chlorophyll flavor in there. So that's been removed. And if it's one of the good companies like Stevita, it's all removed with water process, not with a solvent, which is one of the reasons I recommend specific brands. And so it's going to end up being, you know, white. If you put it into water, it's going to be clear. If you buy the ones that are dark, either brownish or green, that's because they have simply left all the chlorophyll and everything else in there. And if you don't dislike that flavor, well, heck, there are good nutrients in chlorophyll. I've got no problem with that. But the majority of the public goes, ooh, I don't like that. So now a great sweetener that could have helped them, they won't use because they think there's something wrong with it when, in fact, there isn't. So if you like the ones that are green, I have no problem with that. It's just extra nutrients. But I have very few people that do, and so I carry the Stevita Spoonable, which is not. As far as the different organizations out there that are trying to push us away from stevia because it will get us back into the things they want, I have not found that. Every time I've looked at a research study, it was either incorrectly done, funded by somebody in the wrong industry. Stevia has been around for a long time, somewhere between 30 and 40% of the sweeteners used in Japan in all sorts of different foods are stevia. And they did massive research on it. So I have no worry whatsoever about stevia. I just want to make sure that it wasn't one of the ones that was extracted where the steviacides and ribodiacides, which are the sweet parts, chemicals in there. I just don't want them extracted with solvents or anything. And so I stick to the companies that I don't worry about.
And you met, one of them you mentioned was NOW, right?
Right, yeah. Now Foods has what I use is I'm very particular in everything. So for stevia by itself, my favorite is Stevita Spoonable or the Stevita Liquid Extract, which is a liquid. For flavored powders, where somebody wants to mix some into some good quality, like Great Lakes grass-fed gelatin, to make a healthy jello instead of the crap in the stores, Stevita has powders with stevia and natural flavorings. They have an orange and a tropical cherry. I forget what the others is. So that would, again, be Stevita. Mm-hmm. If somebody wants a liquid where the stevia and some flavors are added to the liquid and they're just putting a couple drops into something, then that would either be Wisdom Naturals or NOW, depending on which flavors you happen to like best.
Okay. Okay, good to know. And are these the Yacone, the stevia, the Lakanto? I mean, are these sweeteners, are they heat stable? Like, can we, like, if someone wants to bake something, or do you not recommend using them for that?
All of those that I listed are completely heat stable. You can do anything you want with them. You can put them in the coffee you shouldn't be drinking. You can put them in the cakes you shouldn't be eating. You can make them into the cookies that you should give somebody else that you're trying to cause cancer. Any of those things, they're all totally heat stable. And I just looked up the new website for Herbs America. It's islandherb.com. And so you can go to that website and just put in your cone and get their your cone syrup information. Okay. That or Sun Food. But yes, no, they are completely heat stable. I carry Ilana Amsterdam's book called The Gluten-Free Almond Flour Cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got a great website, too. It's Ilana's Pantry, E-L-A-N-A-S Pantry. But she makes one mistake. She has people using one of the most unhealthy natural sweeteners on the planet Earth, which is agave nectar because it's got even more fructose than high fructose corn syrup. But when I sell the book, I have a I put a sticky on the front with permanent that can't come out, and it's, I'm reading it. I pulled my copy out. It says, "Don't use agave nectar. Use yacone syrup instead. You may also substitute butter or coconut oil for the grapeseed oil that she recommends." So because they're both syrups, it makes the recipes easy. If the recipe for her almond flour carrot cake or her almond flour cookies calls for a third of a cup or a half a cup or whatever of agave nectar, you simply use the same amount of your cone syrup, and now you have a healthy confection because it was used with almond flour, so it doesn't have the starch that would have been used if you used a regular flour. The only problem, and it is a problem because, money is an issue, is agave nectar is cheap and your cone syrup is not. It has not yet gotten famous enough that enough people are growing large fields of it that for the amount being consumed, the price can drop. And so, for example, a 1 liter bottle of Yacone will cost you somewhere around $90 to $100. But of course, I don't want people to be baking confections and flavoring their sweet tooth and feeding their sweet tooth all the time anyway. So that 1 liter bottle, I would like that to last somebody for 9 months or a year.
Right. Yeah, that's good to know. I mean, if someone, obviously, you want to be moving away from the baked goods. But if someone, wants to make some homemade, brownies or cookies using almond flour, using the Yacone, that's a much healthier alternative than doing like Duncan Hines or just buying something at the store.
Much healthier. Much healthier.
Okay. And then I just had another question about the sweeteners. What about maple syrup and raw honey? Are those sweeteners that you don't recommend as well?
Well, it's very easy. Very, very easy. I don't recommend sweeteners, which are sugar, and feed cancer cells or depress immunity or both. And maple syrup and honey and table syrup and molasses and regular sucrose, which is table sugar, all of those are pure sugar. So, when I was a kid at the Walden School in New York, we used to go to Putney, Vermont during the winter, and we watched them tapping the maple trees and taking this barely, barely sweet-tasting liquid out and then boiling it for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and days until finally they boiled off enough of the water that the sugar got concentrated, because the sugar doesn't boil off, only the water does, until it reached what's called the Brix, B-R-I-X level, that they're allowed to call it maple syrup. So for people that think it's a natural raw substance, no, it's been boiled for days. And for people that think that it's in some way good for us, no, it's pure sugar.
So, even
same thing with honey.
So even if someone isn't in trying to heal from cancer, it really isn't something anybody should be eating. Because it is, you said the sugar is, it's an immune suppressant.
Sugar is an immune suppressant or immune depressant. That's correct. If somebody simply wants to be the person who is less likely to get cancer, who is less likely to be the one that catches, staph or strep throat or MRSA or the flu when everybody else around you is catching it, you want to be the one that's less likely to catch it, then all of those things, including honey, including maple syrup, are the things that you want to be using some much healthier substitute sweetener for. Or not eating the sweet to begin with, yeah.
Interesting. Even like raw honey, I can't remember where I read it, but something about it having like natural antifungal properties.
Yes, and actually it has antibacterial and antifungal properties when used topically, and it has been used in the armed forces for survival training. They are always told if you can find, you know, honeybees and manage to not get yourself stung to death, which means not a lot of people ate honey a long time ago. That's a myth, because they weren't going to brave that. They couldn't go out there with a smoker or pesticides. They'd have a hard time. But if you have a bad wound and you apply topically honey on it, it's an exceptional antibacterial agent. If you put it in your mouth, it depresses immune function. If you happen to have a sore throat and you like tea and you sweeten your tea with an active 16 plus or above Manuka honey, where they are pollinating the Manuka. I don't know whether Manuka is a tree or a bush, but the Manuka oil, some of which gets into the honey if it's rated at 16 or more, is unbelievably antifungal and somewhat antibacterial and maybe antiviral, I don't remember. And so the Manuka honey will have some of that. And I actually do have a health practitioner who had a patient who loved tea. This guy apparently drank tea maybe, you know, 3-4 times a day. He liked tea and was always getting sore throats. And he wanted to know if there was something that wasn't too expensive that he could do other than, you know, antibiotics every time he'd get a sore throat 4 or 5 times a year. And he asked this clinical nutritionist, and she said, well, she said, you like tea. You know, we could do an experiment, and I'm not sure how the outcome will be. There's a type of honey called Manuka honey, and if we get you one of the ones that's rated 16+, then if you sweeten your tea with that, then every time you're sipping your tea, you're bathing your throat in an antibacterial antifungal agent. So they gave that a try, and he never got another sore throat.
What does the 16+ mean?
It has to do with the activity level of some chemical from Manuka that they have to analyze and prove is in the honey.
Okay. But it has to be Manuka, otherwise you don't get that same benefit.
That's correct. It's got to be Manuka honey.
Ooh! Boy, this is I've learned a lot myself today. That's why I love interviewing you, David, because it's not just for our listeners, but I'm doing it for me too.
Well, good. That's at least equally important.
So, David, if someone listening, you know, is recently diagnosed with cancer or maybe they're in remission, they want to get help from you, you know, they want to change their lifestyle. You know, you've made it pretty clear that you're looking to work with someone who's motivated, which I think I commend you for, because you don't, it's not fun for either party if they're not truly invested. But if someone is truly invested, what's the best way to learn more about you and, you know, set up a time to do a consult?
Well, the first thing I always request, because it saves me a little bit of phone time, and my time is my worst enemy, is to go to my website. If you just put in davidgetoff.com, it'll redirect you to the website, which is Naturopath for You. But there are 5 different ways to spell you and 5 different ways to spell for. So I just made it davidgetoff, G-E-T-O-F-F, .com. Flip down all the buttons on the left until you get to the one that says Initial Consultation. And either read it or listen to the MP3. That way you've got most of the background information. How do I work? What are you going to have to do? What do I charge? All that stuff. And then when you're done, my phone number is there. Call me and say, okay, read all the stuff on your website. Hey, this is my name. I'd like to set up a consultation. And we go over the things and I get your address and take a deposit and send everything out to you.
Awesome. Easy enough. Perfect. Well, this has been so educational. I could keep going. Like, we could talk and talk for hours, but you're a busy guy, and I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So thank you so very much for taking the time to chat with me. This is a really important topic, and I'm really excited to share it with our listeners. I know they're going to learn a lot.
Absolutely, and since I know there are always going to be people that can't afford, or maybe they're in other countries, although, of course, that doesn't do it. I do have people flying to see me from other countries, but who, you know, can't afford to see somebody and would like to do things on their own, one of the buttons on my website, the one that doesn't say cancer brochure, is another cancer button there. And I actually go over just a small sampling of some of the supplements and the things that I might be recommending to you, although, of course, when you're here, it's personalized, and it's not just the ones that are there. Maybe the ones that are there aren't the ones your body's going to want. But I do give people a whole bunch of information for people that sort of want to treat themselves.
Right. It says if you have cancer.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much again, David. This has been great.
You are very welcome. Talk to you next time.
Sounds good.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Better Beyond 50. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like this episode, don't forget to subscribe on betterbeyond50.com, iTunes, the podcast app, or wherever else you might be listening to this show. And if you have a minute, please leave me a quick review on iTunes. I love to hear from you. If you think someone else might like this free show, please take a minute to share it with a friend or family member so she can benefit from it too. And don't forget to sign up for my free video training and newsletter. Again, just enter your email at betterbeyond50.com to get instant access and make sure you never miss a future show. This is Melissa Kerner signing off, and thanks again for listening. I hope you have a fantastic week. Talk to you soon.